The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Today, wherever you are, that's where we are. I'm so glad you were able to join us this morning and give you a warm welcome. We are a welcoming congregation, whomever you love, whatever your gender or gender identity or expression, we welcome you here. Wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, we welcome you into this ever-widening circle of compassion and justice. I'm the Reverend Larry Piers, minister at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, and I want to give a special welcome as well to anyone who might be visiting us today for the first time. You will notice that in the chat, there will be a link to our virtual connect card. And if you'll click on that anytime during the service and give us some of your information, your contact information, we can keep in touch with you and share with you some of our newsletter and e-news emails that go out periodically. So please connect with us that way. How could I forget to say happy Mother's Day to all of you who are mothers, who have that opportunity to be here with us today, and I hope you feel celebrated through our conversations today. Our opening words are from Henry David Thoreau. Only that day dawns to which we are awake. There is more day to dawn. The sun is but a morning star. And so let's greet this day and greet one another on the screen as if we were in each other's presence. Great. It's great to see you all. And Linda Stopher will be doing our chalice lighting reading. Linda.
Good morning. Our chalice lighting reading this morning is Deep Calls Unto Deep, Joy Calls Unto Joy by Reverend Gordon B. McKeeman. Deep calls unto deep, joy calls unto joy, light calls unto light. Let the kindling of this flame rekindle us in the inner light of love, of peace, of hope. And as one flame lights another, nor grows the less. We pledge ourselves to be bearers of the light wherever we are.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us, and with all the people of the world.
Our gathering song is Now Let Us Sing. The words are on the screen. Join in when you feel ready.
Let us sing. Hi, I'm Amy. Today on this Mother's Day, we also honor the first Mother's Day, a Mother's Day for Peace created by Unitarian Julia Ward Howe in the 1870s. She sought to join with others to protest war and find alternative ways to resolve conflicts so that mothers would not have to see their children die in the devastation of war. Here's Mother's Day of Peace Proclamation by Julia Ward Howe. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be that of water or of tears. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken with us to unlearn all that we've been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each learning after his own time the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and of humanity, I earnestly ask that a General Congress of Women without limit of nationality be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and at the earliest period of consistent with its objects to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, the great and general interests of peace.
Thank you, Amy. Now let us prepare for a time of meditation. Find a stillness and a quiet place within. Feel your feet flat upon the ground. Feel the sturdiness of the earth and the wonder of the earth as your feet gently touch that earth and as the earth touches back. Feel yourself supported by the chair. Feel the steadiness within yourself. As we enter this time of meditation, take a moment to recall the faces and to say the names of our mothers and/or our mother figures. Say them out loud, even though we are muted, or say them silently to yourself. Bring yourself into the presence of that mother figure or that mother in your own life. And now ponder a word or a phrase that describes your mother or your mother figure. Usually that word has a story attached to it, but for the moment, just reflect on what word comes to mind. And if you want to, you can type that word into the chat during this meditation time, a word that defines for you your mother. Whether alive or past, we hold these persons in the holy sanctuary of our heart. We hold what other gratitude we might feel, And when this may not come easily, we can recognize that there is still something to be grateful for. We are now in the company of those who have guided us and given to us, however imperfectly, their mothering. Some of those words are art, loving, gentle, kind, creative, educator. I would add courage. Endurance. So before we move into our visual meditation, I want to take this moment to build on what Amy had shared with us. I want to hold up the testimony of the life of Julia Ward Howe, the founder of the first Mother's Day, a Mother's Day for Peace. Julia Ward Howe did not have an easy route in her own life. She had a strict and constricting childhood, a strict and constricting marriage with a man that sought to confine her to the conventions for women and wives at the time. Yet at one point in her life, she had a spiritual awakening after listening to William Ellery Channing, Unitarian minister in the Boston area. She then recognized that she wanted to dedicate herself to personal and to social change and transformation. And it's from this conviction that her Mother's Day of Peace proclamation came. Howe reminds us that mothering need not be confined to gender or biology, that mothering can also mean attending to the deeper cross-generational needs for bringing forth human potential and capacities. Mothering can also mean that we can become responsible for giving birth to a world where war and the ravages of war no longer pass on from generation to generation unabated. So let us open ourselves up to this broader task of mothering in our world. As we experience this visual meditation with eyes open, receive the images and attend to your heart and recognize all the places in our world that need this general mothering approach. Amen. So let's watch the visual meditation. Thank you. So my sermon topic today is the stories our mother never told us. So all of us are not composed merely of flesh and blood, of bone and muscle, of what hair we have or wish we had. We're all composed of more than what is visible to us and to others. We are more than what is merely on the surface of our lives. Most of what we are composed of may be, as the fox said to the little prince, be invisible to the eye. We are composed of what qualities we embody, by what we cherish and hold dear. We are composed by our values. And we are composed by whatever memories and hopes we stash away for the times when we may actually need them. And dear friends, haven't we actually needed to draw upon whatever reservoirs of memories and hopes we have had during and over this past year? Most significantly, and this is the focus of my conversation with you today, I believe we are composed of stories. The American poet and political activist who's famous for her poems about equality and feminism and social justice, Muriel Rukeyser, probably said it best. The universe is made of stories, not of atoms. When I first read that Rukeyser quote, I couldn't help but immediately agree. It just feels so true to me, and maybe to you as well. I don't know where I would be today if it were not for the stories that my mother told me as a child. Embedded in these stories were some lessons that it's actually taken me a lifetime to discover, to uncover, and recover. I remember sitting at the kitchen table in the earlier years of my life, helping my mother to prepare dinner. No one ever told her after she immigrated to this country from Italy around age 20 that she didn't have to cook a complete meal from scratch every evening after returning home from work. So obeying maybe some cultural or genetic routine, she would return home from work only to get to work again to put a meal together. Once I think I was around the age of 10 and I had had dinner at a friend's house. And I told my mother of this fascinating adventure that I had had, explained to her that his mother had made a frozen dinner. I think they were called TV dinners back then. And since all you had to do was like take it out of the oven, peel back the foil, and you could conveniently have dinner even in front of the TV if you wanted. It was like a wonder of modern technology to me, and I was somewhat fascinated. My mother, however, was flabbergasted. And I think that was the time I learned my first Italian curse words. So no modern convenience could actually alter the dinner making pattern in my house. Retrospectively, I realized that those times were more, really more than about making dinner. I had my specific jobs that were assigned to me by my mother, depending upon what she was preparing for dinner. Most often I was given onions and peppers to cut. Sometimes I was given eggplants to peel, and I almost always was given cloves of garlic to chop, to mince into little pieces. As I reflect back on that garlic, I can't help but think that my being assigned garlic at that age of 8, 9 to chop was the equivalent of the fidget toys given to some contemporary children to help with focus and with attention. My fidgeting was to be channeled by taking a knife, crush the garlic cloves, slowly chop these garlic pieces into the tiniest pieces that I could. And my reward was to bring the cutting board over to the stove, slowly lower the garlic pieces into the olive oil and watch them sizzle a little in the pan on the stove. Even today, while I'm cooking, I can't help but remember these early treasured experiences. Yet what I most remember about these cooking times was not just about the activity of helping with the cooking, but the conversations that I had with my mother during that time. Since she worked during the day and I went to school, these were precious times to be together. And these were the times that she would often tell me stories, stories of her own life. My mother told me stories of what it was like to live in Italy during the Second World War, while Mussolini and the fascists ruled. Her parents had left Italy right before the war, had escalated, and they had intended to take my mother with them. But right before departure, and some of you, I think, have heard this story, she had rheumatic fever, and thus she could not take the ship to America with her parents. So she lived with her grandparents during that time in the neighborhood of Capodimonte on the top of the hill in Naples. She told me of how her family had to give up many valuable items, gold, jewelry, silver, to support the war effort. She told me how her family hid someone in their home by fashioning some kind of hiding place in a dresser. She told me how she was forced to march with the other youth, even though she didn't want to keep up appearances of support of the government and to risk coming under any kind of suspicion as a family. She showed me pictures of her friends. She showed me pictures of her boyfriends in Italy, and I sensed that she longed for those times of her youth at the beach with, I'll just call them Antonio, Francesco, Giuseppe, and her girlfriends. Such a different time, such a different life than what she was living at the time in which she was reminiscing with me. It gave me kind of a view of her life before she was a mother. She told me that when the war was over, her parents had sent her a big red hat to wear so that they could find her in the crowds when she descended the ship in New York City to begin her new life in America. I didn't actually mind hearing the same stories again and again, and sometimes in between chopping onions or garlic, I would request a particular story. Sometimes when I would ask a question, rather than responding directly, my mother would tell me a story instead. Anyone else ever have that experience with their parents or their mother speaking to us in stories? It was as if she was imparting some wisdom, for woven into these stories, as my mother told them, were the qualities of courage, of independence, of risk-taking, of faith, of determination, and resilience. The plots of the stories often demonstrated her dilemmas of integrity, the challenges of fear, and the uncertainty of leaving the familiar to begin life in uncertainty and hope in a new world. I would often get lost in the imagination of the story. I understood that there were messages within the story, but I understood more of those messages retrospectively. My soul just gathered these stories. and I feel like I still draw upon them to this day. Now, sometimes I'd ask my mother direct questions. Like, I remember asking her about the church's teachings about divorce, since my mother was an Italian and my father was Irish. I often say we were genetically Roman Catholic. So when I asked her, I think I was about age 12, why the church forbade divorce. My mother had divorced my father about when I was about 9. My mother responded to me clearly and directly. Larry, or better yet, Lottie, the church teaches a lot of things. You must follow your conscience. That was a lesson that has stuck with me. These were not mere words for me because they were so exemplified in her own life as she took kind of an a la carte approach to the church's teachings and practice. Most of what we've learned from our parents, I believe, come to us more by their examples than by their words. So for me, I think it was, I really cherish the fact that in this case, her words and her example matched. Perhaps when I had to face more directly my own struggles with the beliefs and the teachings of the church in late adolescence, my mother had already planted these seeds for me. Follow your conscience. It was this inner compass that led me towards searching for a religious community like Unitarian Universalists by the time I was 18. A discovery that has allowed me to continue to grow, to adapt, and to learn toward a faith that makes sense to my lived experiences and my deeper aspirations. I suspect that many of us have had similar experiences, maybe at different decades in our own lives, when we couldn't help but follow our own soul's signals. But friends, let's not confuse follow your conscience with an easy does it religious path, because God knows it ain't easy. Without a still small voice within, without an inner moral struggle, without a forging a religion that you're willing to actually live by, there's no backbone. If we merely bend to every wind, if we put up with everything that comes our way out of some distorted view of tolerance, then Unitarian Universalists, I think, risk becoming Gumby-like characters rather than a strong moral force that can speak with conviction to the moral and social challenges of our time. I believe that with this kind of moral compass that we have to develop ourselves and in the company of others, we can act with compassion in our everyday life where it really matters. I never understood follow your conscience fully when my mother passed on that wisdom to me. Only life itself would forge its meaning in me over time, requiring not just freedom, but also responsibility. So the ambience around the stories told to each of us from our mothers, our fathers, our parent figures linger even now. Perhaps you too recognize some kind of soul code in these stories that your own heart is still deciphering. And then there are the stories that were not or could not be told. Often the fullness of what we experience or long for cannot be contained in just a story. I've often told the story about me as a shy child, and my mother was always trying to lure me out of my shyness in that time when we were in a grocery store, and my mother just started juggling oranges right there in the aisle, and I just hid behind an aisle. You know, and it's just like, Mama, Mama Mia, stop, you know, don't do this. And she would say to me, Lai, you don't know these people. They don't know you. It's a free country. And she would continue to juggle as I continue to feel humiliated in the moment. But those were the kind of messages, most of which were time released because I was probably shy through the first few years of college. And then finally it caught on to me what she was trying to say. Sometimes there are stories that we can't tell because what we have to tell as one author says, is just too big or too much, too something for us to place in the small shrine that a story is. Think alongside of me now. What are some of the stories that your mother or mother figure never told you? Never told you. Let's pause for a moment and think about that together. So my mother never told me stories about what it was like actually to leave those friends, her grandparents and boyfriends in the pictures that she showed me. She seemed to hold those pictures in her hand just a little longer while showing to me, them to me. And I never knew from her directly what it was like to end the life you have known and to start again in a whole new place. What losses, what memories may have been too tender for her to tell. Sometimes the stories that we have not heard from our mother or mother figures are the ones that may describe more fully why they show up the way they show up to us in the everyday. My mother never told me stories about death. I remember when her mother, my grandmother, Conchetta, died, that we could not travel to the funeral in time to get there. It was too far from where we were living. And so, and the last time I had actually seen my grandmother, I was just an infant, so I was too young to remember her. But I observed that my mother put a picture of her mother on the mantle in the living room. She lit a small votive candle and would light and relight that candle over the course of some days. Something was going on in that experience of grieving for my mother. I never asked, we never talked about it. And I only came to understand this experience my mother was going through when I actually had to experience my own grief and loss when my mother died when she was just 40 years old, that childhood rheumatic fever had caught up with her and she had died of heart disease. Some of you know this, I was 16 at the time. It was then, I can't believe it now, but it was then that I actually had my first experience of what death is and what death means. It just stunned me at the time that I had never really, really experienced death as something real until then. Sometimes we actually have to know something directly to actually know it, since it cannot really be contained in the small shrine that a story is. Having experienced it, the wisdom came to me early in life, which I keep learning and relearning. And that wisdom is this, and I share it with you. Life is a gift, not a given. Life is a gift, not a given. When I'm able to abide in that wisdom, I'm mindful of where I am, where I'm putting my energy. When I'm able to abide in that wisdom, I'm cautious about what mishigash I allow myself to get caught up in. When I recognize the wisdom of this life is a gift, not a given, I remember to take a sacred pause. I redirect my attention towards what matters rather than whatever dramas may be emotionally captivating at the time. But the truth of the matter is I often forget this wisdom. And so religious community can often cause me to remember, to recenter, to redirect, and to recommit to this essential wisdom about the giftedness of life. At times in our own lives, in our own family, in our workplace, or even in our congregations, in order to recover what really matters, we have to intentionally recenter, redirect, and recommit. And since I seem to be rolling my R's a lot right now, we have to recalibrate as well. Margaret Wheatley, in her book, Turning to One Another, emphasizes that we live in a time when we need to engage in and create more powerful stories than we usually do. She writes, "There is no power greater than a community discovering what it cares about. Ask what's possible, not what's wrong. Keep asking. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters." So I focus my own stories this morning more on myself than I'm accustomed to doing, so that I could kind of illustrate from my own experience some of the stories that my mother told me, and at least a few stories that my mother never told me. But perhaps you get the point, that it was the story that wasn't told, the ones about grieving and losing and dying, that passed on to me what I feel is the most enduring lesson that I constantly have to remember, that life's a gift, not a gift, not a given. What about you? Each of us could tell a story about ourselves, a story about our faith, a story about our struggles, a story about our heart, a story about our body, a story about our encounters, what could be called God or what is holy. And I'm so glad that we oftentimes have had these opportunities to share these stories with one another. I'm so glad that we've been able to stay connected through these online services over this pandemic. But I have sorely missed the kind of informal times when we could just hang out and hear each other's stories in bits and pieces and so forth. And so I know that by looking at you on this flat screen this morning, that there's so many dimensions and so many layers of each of us, and that most of those layers are the stories that we can tell. And so through the month of June, I'm going to set up a kind of a story tour. Before we even open up our building, I want to have some opportunities to gather in some small groups with members of the congregation, just a time to kind of hear each other's stories, to kind of reacquaint each other, not just with the surface of our lives, but the layers of our lives that are oftentimes captured in the stories that we can tell. So certainly there is contemporary and ancient wisdom that reveals to us, as Muriel Rukeyser says, that the universe is made of stories, not of atoms. So I want to hear some of your stories. I want us to hear each other's stories as we move towards reconnecting sometime in the fall. But I also believe that we have to become the stories that we often become the stories that we tend to tell. May we claim today what wisdom that we do not know from our mothers and our mothering, that we do know, I'm sorry, from our mothers and mothering figures, but also claim today for the sake of our own spiritual health and vitality, that is much that we do not yet know, much yet to tell and to discover and to decode and to make sense of. So in closing, I want to encourage you to take some time this week with a practice to write yourself a letter as if it were from your mother or mother figures. Whether this person is alive or not, you can still open your heart to receive and to compose this letter. Let that letter, no matter how long or how short, contain some of the wisdom that was conveyed to you directly or indirectly from your mother or mother figures. It would be a letter from your mother that you compose and kind of capture some of what you feel she would want you to hear, some of the wisdom that mother figures have passed on to you. So David White, the poet, did that very thing following a dream that he had after his mother had passed. He woke up in the middle of the night after having that dream, and he just had to sit at the kitchen table, put wood in the fire, And he then found himself composing this poem, which I'll read to you as our closing. It's entitled, A Farewell Letter. She wrote me a letter after her death, and I remember a kind of happy light as I sat by the rose tree on her old bench by the back door, so surprised to receive it, wondering what she would say, and looking up before I could open it, and laughing to myself in silent expectation. Dear son, it is time for me to leave you the words you are used to hearing. They're no longer mine to give. You can only hear those words of motherly affection now from your own mouth, and only for those who stand motherless before you. Read that line again. You can only hear those words of motherly affection now from your own mouth, and only for those who stand motherless before you. As for me, I must forsake adulthood and be bound gladly to a new childhood. You must understand this apprenticeship demands of me an elemental innocence from everything I have ever held in my hands. I know your generous soul is well able to let me go. You will in the end be happy to know my God was true, and that after so many years of loving you so long, I find myself in the wide, infinite mercy of being mothered myself. P.S. All your intuitions were true. So I want to invite you into that practice this week, if you can. Try it out. Be sure to include a P.S., since the P.S. often contains the kernel of the wisdom our mother never told us. So this is the time in our service where we attend to our heart. We listen to our own lives as it's happening right now and as we're experiencing it. And we attend to the joys, the celebrations that we are experiencing. And we also attend alongside of the joys, whatever sorrows we may be feeling, whatever concerns capture our attention for ourselves, for those we love, or our world. So during the musical interlude, we'll take some time to just listen to whatever it is that we're holding, whatever joy, whatever concern. And following the interlude, we'll have an opportunity to share, those who want to. Remember to share briefly. You can share it in the chat, or you can listen for the instructions on how you might share what you want to share with this community using the raise hand feature. You'll get instructions for that. So let's listen first to the music.
I now invite you to sing with me, Spirit of Life.
I'm sorry, I'm going to pause here for just a moment. Our president, Linda Weaver, asked for a moment to share, and I missed that at the end of Matters of the Heart, so I'm going to give her the floor momentarily.
Thanks, Mike. You didn't miss it. I just typed it in. I just wanted to say Happy Mother's Day to everyone and welcome everyone and say, Marion, it's so good to see you. You look wonderful. And to welcome Ross. That's it. And to just say how filled with joy I am today after yesterday's service. It was lovely. It was great to see the fellowship. And I can't wait to see all of you in person. That's it.
As I prepare to extinguish our chalice, please join me in saying in the unison closing words. This is Theodore Parker, Be Ours a Religion. Be ours a religion which, like the sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, the good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its profession of faith, divine living.
So let's join now in our closing song. This is my song. And the words will appear on the screen. Sing when you feel ready. It's a very familiar tune to many of us.
Good evening, good evening. Thank you. This is my song, thou God of all the nations, a song of peace for lands afar and mine. This is my home, the country where my heart is. Here are my hopes, my dreams, my holy shrine. But other hearts in other lands are beating with hopes and dreams as true and high as mine. My country's skies are bluer than the ocean, and sunlight beams on clover leaf and pine. But other lands have sunlight too and clover, and skies are everywhere as blue as mine. Oh, hear my song, thou God of all the nations, a song of peace for their land and for mine.